Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Welcome to Bits About Books. Our guest today is Charlie Murney, and we speak with him about his book, The Tao of Podcasting, and interpretation of the Tao Te Ching.
So I have read the Tao Te Ching many, many times over the years, but in doing the interpretation, I reached another level of understanding that I had never thought I could get to. The first passage of the Tao Te Ching is very weird. It's the Tao, the eternal Tao cannot be named. The Tao that can be named is not the eternal Tao. And it goes on. And you're like, what is this guy? What does it mean? That one was almost impossible for me to write. And I went to it many times in an effort to do my interpretation and couldn't get it done. And that's really the classic example of what I mentioned to you a few minutes ago. Finally, one day I came back to it 4/5 of the way through the process, and it just came to me in a moment.
Based in Washington, D.C. and Maryland, Charlie Murney, co-founder of Podville Media, channels his passion for new technology into creating impactful media experiences. His journey began 11 years ago at Launch Workplaces in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Since then, Podville Media, originally Podcast Village, has earned 6 Telly Awards, including 3 in 2023, highlighting their commitment to excellence in media production. He's particularly proud of Rap Stories, which reached the number one spot on Apple Podcasts in the music category. With over 25 years in real estate market and experience in the tourism and golf industries, his diverse roles have profoundly shaped his approach to media and podcasting, enabling him to craft messages that truly resonate and engage. He is the author of Podcasting Made Simple, where he attempted to demystify podcasting. In The Tao of Podcasting, he merges philosophical insights with practical tips, emphasizing engaged listening and the strategic pause before the podcast. His current focus is in creating inward-facing podcasts. Beyond his professional life, he is the father of 24-year-old twins and an avid musician, playing the mandolin in both a folk duo and a jug band. Not to mention his penchant for doodling, which embellishes The Tao of Podcasting cover to cover. Now, onto this wonderful episode with Charlie Murney. Charlie, welcome to Bits About Books, and I'm thrilled to talk to you about the Tao of Podcasting. Welcome.
I'm thrilled to be here, Sabinjan. I really am. It's my pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
This is an unusual book to write, because why would you take a transactional activity and try to put philosophy into it?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So obviously there is a reason why you did what you did.
Yes.
And I think let's start right at the beginning. When did you get the idea of writing this book?
Well, and just to give that some prehistory, if I could, I wrote a book that is available called Podcasting Made Simple. There's a wonderful podcast called Podcasting Made Simple too. That's not my podcast. And in it, I was very technical and giving instructions. I co-wrote it with a client of mine, a very successful podcaster, and how to do the art form, how to make the recordings, things that we felt it was important to look for. And of course, a month later, audio and software and hardware were updated, and many of the things that I taught about in that book became completely no longer used, for right. example, multiple tracks on a Zoom call or Riverside, et cetera. So I knew before I wrote this book, to sort of give you a prelude, that I wasn't going to write a technical book about podcasting again. My father many years ago wrote a book about celestial navigation. And the wonderful thing is, even though we have GPS even in our phones now, when the electricity goes out, all those rules of shooting a sun's sight with a sextant are exactly the same. So he did something technically, which was to explain it in a simple form. And the reason he wrote that book is because no one had done it. It was so complicated. And he said, sure, there's got to be a simple way. So to answer your question of how I started, it really did occur during the quarantine period of our lives. And I studied philosophy in school, have a large bookshelf of books on Chinese Taoism, the philosophy of Taoism, T-A-O-I-S-M. And many of the titles of some of those books, as you probably already know, are the Tao of motherhood, the Tao of leadership, the Tao of parenting, the Tao of chaos, the Tao of et cetera. And I thought on a whim one day while I was taking notes in some of those hours that we had alone that, oh, well, the Tao of podcasting. I even have the original sketches that I did with a title and what I call from the cover of the book, the yin yang microphone. Yeah. And I have those original sketches when I was just doodling. I am an inveterate doodler. If I ever do another business card, it may just say doodler under my name. And I thought, that's something, and scribbled a few notes and went about my business. I came back later during that same period and tried to. So the principal text of Chinese Taoism is written by Lao Tse, if that's pronounced differently from everybody pronounces it, seems a little different. The Tao Te Ching. And that is 81 verses that were allegedly written. He was leaving China to go off to the barbarian wastelands, and one of his disciples met him at the wall and said, please, please don't go before you've written down your teachings. And that's the legend of the Tao Te Ching, the 81 verses, which are really quite contemplative. They make you think. It's hard to understand what he's meaning, but it also makes you go back and think about nature and the flow of nature and harmony with the environment that you live in. So I had written a paper in college called The Tao of Sailing. I grew up sailing on Maryland's Chesapeake Bay, and I've sailed in the ocean for years, and I thought it was a pretty good connection. It was a very easy paper to write. I'm very proud of it. And maybe got my only good grade in school with that one. I don't
know. I'd love to read it, though.
I'm actually taking it. You're very kind. I'm taking it, and I'm going to see if I can dust it off and rewrite it and maybe update it a little and just put that out there as sort of a, if you're interested, here.
That would be wonderful.
Kind of a paper. So, yes, and I've got some projects that have come out of the Tao of podcasting. So what I did after I'd drawn the microphone was I went and opened the book, The Tao Te Ching, at random, looked at a passage, and then just tried to blink, to think about how could I translate it, as I often say, into the world of podcasting. How can this, because in my heart, I'm trying to expose more people in 2024 and beyond to Taoism, which I think it's clearly a philosophy, not a religion. It's just a way of thinking about ourselves in our environment. And in this current culture of AI and of technology, self-driving cars, et cetera, I'm driving my mother's car and it tells me when something's in my left quadrant or right quadrant. And it's amazing. But I think it's also very important for us to remember the basics. I see podcasting as storytelling brought forward. Whether it's a cave painting or Stonehenge, we're all trying to transmit and communicate ideas. Aristotle was doing it as he walked around the Acropolis. You and I are doing it with podcasts. Before podcasts, we were doing it with books and fireside chats and et cetera, and songs. So I see that as a continuation of storytelling. And I think that that is why I can take what is typically inherently technical. I'm going to a conference that's being held on podcasting in the Washington, D.C. area for the first time. It's being held here next week. And it's going to be a lot of technical stuff. And I'm really excited to hear the current demographics and the current trends and see some of the new gear, I'm sure. But I also think it's somewhat spiritual, somewhat philosophical. No, that's not right. And I think it's about the art of communication, and I also delve a little bit into the art of listening and thinking about that experience and being somewhat, to use an overly used expression, mindful of what we're doing. So if I can connect people to Taoism, great. And they say, well, what is that thing Charlie's talking about? If I can ask people, sometimes I talk about the pause before the podcast, the silence before the sound. Great comedians know that silence is one of the tools they use in delivery of their routine. I think it's important to remember that the studio is silent much more than it's occupied, and to remember there's a positive and negative to all these things. And if we can just pause for just a moment, take a breath and wonder why we're here, why you and I are talking today, I think that's kind of beautiful, kind of profound and important part of the process. So I ended up writing a few verses as I sat there in my basement and thinking, well, this is okay. And to give your listeners what happened next, I had, I think, perhaps 5 out of the 81 written, 5 or 6. And I shared it with 2 friends. I love feedback. I certainly have called my wife almost 40 years my best sounding board. She did edit every single page, including another paid editor, but she was a wonderful sounding device. And 2 friends, one from high school and one from our company, I shared those bits of those 5 interpretations with them. And I didn't really know that I would ever go on with that and finish the 81. And they were so encouraging of the idea and the concept that I said, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and do the whole thing and finish. And so just as a thought to, again, to your audience, feedback is important. And my friends buoyed me up and helped me to get this to the finish line.
This initial 5, I'm presuming you wrote quite quickly because you sort of had those thoughts somewhere.
Yes.
And then it took you a few weeks, I guess, to get those feedback.
Yeah, it was months later. I had them in a notebook. Then I ultimately put them on a Google document and thought, well, you know, I don't know if I'll ever do anything with this. And then when I was meeting with Jeff and was with Elizabeth, I said, hey, you know, I showed him an illustration. Again, it was probably the microphone because you get it right away when you see that. And said, what do you think about this? And they were like, wow, that's really interesting. And I read a verse or two. And to get to that, if I can quickly, I tried to let the verses come naturally, holistically, whatever the right expression is. If I couldn't get it right away, I would move on. And I felt that was, if you will, a Taoistic way of working it, of getting to it. So I did write them fairly quickly. I certainly reworked them and tried to refine them and make them brief and concise. But I tended not to agonize over a verse if it didn't come to me somewhat quickly and naturally, if that is part of the answer to your question. So ultimately I had, I don't know, 15 or so written, and I thought, when am I going to really sit down and do the lion's share of this work? And I had an opportunity. My daughter was going to take a weekend class, a 1-week class out of state, and my wife couldn't be with her. So I went with her and stayed in a motel room, for the 5 days while she was learning musical instrument repair. She's a music teacher and an English teacher. And while she was learning how to bang dents out of saxophones, I was in the hotel room with an apple and a banana and a copy of the Tao Te Ching. And I just sort of got in the right mindset. And that's where the majority, I'd say 70% of the book was written over those days, when I could just allow myself to be in a simple space without any distractions, without the things that I needed to fix around the house or take out or take to my mom's house, et cetera. And I think that was very therapeutic for me, and it allowed me to get the lion's share of the work done. Then when I came home and I had 80 to 85% done, I started working with a person who helped me get the book published and got it finished, and then got it proofread, found so many discrepancies and mistakes. And then after I thought it was really in prime form, then I gave it to my wife, Alice, to review. And she improved it so much. It was a joy. I can't thank her enough for her editing. She didn't get paid, but she and I dedicated the darn thing to my brother because it was he who is now a psychiatrist and actually a Sufi priest. He was the one who in high school, when he was on his quest, introduced me to Alan Watts, arguably the greatest American Taoist, and his writings. And I got hooked and said, well, that's where I'm going to stay right there. So it was being able to focus and then finishing and getting my best advisors and friends to read it and think about it. And it was later that I'd been doodling, as I said earlier, all these years. It was later when I thought about the Chinese calligraphy that is generally included in books on Taoism, certainly in the Tao Te Ching. And I can't do calligraphy of any kind, but I had been drawing, podcasting, I'll call it podcast sketchbook, for I guess almost 12 years now. And I didn't have any home for them or any intended use for them. It's just what I did. And I can tell stories about that. But one day a light just went off in my head. And I said, I don't have to worry about the calligraphy at all. I can use my drawings. And it also helped me to refine the book because I tried in my own way to match the drawing with the passage. And some of those can be apparent and some of those are not. But I also got to include the gear with the drawings. Many of my guests, I have a whole index in the back of the guests who were in some of those drawings, and I asked them all for permission. And that made it a very fun process for me to include that. And I hope engaging for the reader.
Yeah, absolutely. I would come back to this drawing process and what you did because they're very good. I mean, I really love them.
You're too kind.
I mean, they're really nice because I try to dabble a bit, and I know what you draw is not easy to draw. So to put it very, very simply.
sometimes they work and sometimes they don't.
Absolutely. Let's dive into the book.
Sure.
When you thought of the original book and then you wanted to adapt, you obviously thought that because it has 81 chapters, you need to sort of reinterpret it from the podcasting point of view.
Right.
So what was that process like? And with some examples of
sure.
any of the chapters, if you can sort of elaborate how that really went about in your mind.
Yeah, there's a few comments there, and I appreciate the question very much. In doing an interpretation of a work like this, and I've read the Tao Te Ching many times, and if anyone listening is interested in learning about Taoism, I can recommend a book that I didn't write, and that is The Tao of Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, P-O-O-H, by Benjamin Hoff, H-O-F-F. Simply a marvelous, wonderful read, especially if you've read or had your mother read Winnie the Pooh to you when you were little. It's a wonderful way to understand and learn about Taoism. So I have read the Tao Te Ching many, many times over the years, but in doing the interpretation, I reached another level of understanding that I had never thought I could get to. So that in itself was really a wonderful exercise for me. To answer your question in a slightly different way, the first passage of the Tao Te Ching is it's like in the beginning there was light or there was God and God said this. It's a very weird, it's the Tao, the eternal Tao cannot be named. The Tao that can be named is not the eternal Tao. And it goes on and you're like, what is this guy? What does it mean? That one was almost impossible for me to write. And I went to it many times in an effort to do my interpretation and couldn't get it done. And that's really the classic example of what I mentioned to you a few minutes ago. Finally, one day I came back to it 4/5 of the way through the process, and it just came to me in a moment. So one, by doing an interpretation of this, even with something that I truly appreciate, I got to another level, in my own opinion, of understanding the original text. In letting the passages work through and sometimes rewriting them and feeling them slightly differently, I got to a better understanding of my own text. And then I did research that I hadn't done before. The aforementioned Benjamin Hoff published after a long time of not writing about Taoism. He's a very interesting guy. I'd love to meet him someday. He did his own translation of the Tao Te Ching into English. And he went back to the roots. It's called The Eternal Tao Te Ching. It's a big, thick book because every chapter he does a very detailed analysis of the calligraphy and what that might or might not have meant. And of course, there are many different translations. Ursula K. Le Guin, famous author, has done a translation. It's a little different from the classic one that I had when I was in school. So reading Benjamin Hoff's translation led me to another understanding of it. And I can't remember which verse, but there's one where he has said, this clearly wasn't written, in his opinion, by the original master or masters who wrote the text. And on that one, I just did an illustration, a sort of chaotic one, and put no text in. I said, in deference to what I've learned and someone who I admire, I'm not going to do an interpretation on this single chapter. I will just put the drawing there. And I hope that would, if someone comes across that, they say, huh, sometimes it works another way that you don't expect. So I learned a lot by doing the interpretation, and anyone interested in poetry or sacred texts or philosophical texts, if I was a teacher, I would recommend students do this exercise because there's a different level of understanding you get both for your own content and the original form. So it was quite a process. All the chapters were a different experience. And then, as I said, matching them up as best I could thematically with an illustration was something totally unexpected and really fun. So,
right. So let's pick up a few of the chapters, and you can do it at random the way you feel. And let's talk about what it was and how it translated in your mind into what it is in your book.
Sure. Well, one of the interesting things I'll say as an introduction to that is after the book, then came ChatGPT. And I shoved the whole thing into it.
Okay.
And said, what do you think? Now, I'm paraphrasing everyone dramatically. But one of the things that was fascinating is its summary of my book led me to another level of seeing it from above. So once you're down deep into the content, that's why my wife was so valuable, it's hard to get out of the trenches. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
So with Alice, with ChatGPT, and I didn't use any of that. That was much way after I published, self-published the book. But it allowed me to look at it from another vantage point. And I realized, as I did while writing it, here's a chapter called Why We Listen, I realized that a great lot of what I was writing about was certainly for the podcasters, but also I hope it's for the podcast listeners. And I talk now when I talk to people about this, I talk about the philosophy of listening. Because Confucius spoke about it, Lao Tzu spoke about it, many philosophies and religions talk about the contemplation, about listening to your content, about being respectful. And in podcasting, we talk about listening, and we also talk about engaged listening. How can I make a connection to my audience? How can I get them to answer a survey? How can I get them to buy my book? But how can I get them to be involved, to join a campaign if it's a political podcast? And I was talking about to a dear friend about engaged listening earlier today. So I think there's a whole philosophy. And as a person, I may have told you prior to this that I call myself the CLO here at our company, Podville Media, which stands for Chief Listening Officer. And I try to listen, you should always eat your own cooking. So I try to listen to everything we produce after it's been produced, after it's been posted to the internet, and download it myself and listen to it. And I also try to listen to as much other content as I possibly can. And which means I don't always watch video podcasts. I generally listen to the audio version, but I think that we don't think enough as a generalization about the art, the philosophy of listening and how important it is. I've had people ask me when talking about this, well, what do you do when you're driving? and you hear something and it's a good comment. Do you take a note? Do you what? I said, frankly, I can't always do it. If you're on the Beltway, you can't do it, but I will pull over and I will take a moment if it's safe. I will pull over, park my car. I've many times tweeted at my friend Damon Davis, who does a podcast. I'm not an orphan or an adoptee, but he does one about adoptee stories, and they're extraordinary and moving. Who Am I Really is the name. And I've many times pulled over and tweeted or texted directly to that podcaster, different shows as well, LinkedIn comments, all of the above, to say this was profound or this was funny or this moved me. I think it's important that, and as a byproduct to looking at this afterwards and thinking about the passages that talk about listening that I didn't even think consciously when I wrote them. I think it's important that we as humans think about our listening habits. Our children, our parents, my mother is in her final journey and can hardly listen anymore. How do we treat the art of listening, respecting that audience? So those were some of the byproducts. I hope I've touched on some of the answers that you wanted there.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
A studio has no imagination to pilot an interview. A producer must remember lessons learned and listen with an open mind and ear. Sometimes all tools and techniques of editing, all tips on interviewing, are not needed to capture the story. A simple recording of a sincere story can accomplish all that is needed.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it. Would it be okay if we, say, picked up the chapter on simplicity or, I think you sort of elaborated on the listener bit right now.
Yes. Simplicity. A studio has no imagination to pilot an interview. A producer must remember lessons learned and listen with an open mind and ear. Sometimes all tools and techniques of editing, all tips on interviewing, are not needed to capture the story. A simple recording of a sincere story can accomplish all that is needed. I think what I'm getting at is, let's remember the story. We have all of our tools, an expensive microphone, headphones that don't cost $15, there's a tip, and what I want us all to remember, especially the people who work in the production of content, that the story is what we're really going for. And if that's told without fancy bells and whistles, if you get a good capture, good clean audio, it may not even need a lot of editing. Yeah. I had a client in the early days when I was a one-man shop, and he could give his presentation without saying, I'm afraid I might have said a few times. He never faltered. And I essentially never had to edit, ever. I had a gentleman, a wonderful friend, came on early when I was doing a show, and he said 90 times. And at that point, I was very careful, and I always am, about letting the client, the interviewee, listen to their show before I posted it. This is before people really understood podcasts. And he said, Charlie, it was great, but I just wish I hadn't said so many times. And hard lessons learned. I went in and spent 2.5 hours editing all the uhs out. Then my 23-year-old employee came in the next day and said, well, you can make a quick edit this way. And I thought, oh, my God. But But those are important lessons to learn. I didn't get the 2 hours back, but I never had to do it that way again. And of course, now with AI, you can take that out with a half a dozen keystrokes and you can recognize that sound and have them all removed. Although one can argue, you may, that taking them all out is maybe not the best way. You need to have a few of them in there. So I think there, I'm just trying for us to remember, if only for a moment, that it's the story, and that sometimes a story told simply is the best.
I totally agree. I remember during my television days back in India, I was doing this show for NBC Asia, and we were talking about the backdrop, and I said, just make it black. Don't worry about anything. Nobody cares. Nobody really cares if you have a fancy backdrop or not. And I said,
to my support,
I said, look at some BBC and they were doing the same thing.
Yeah.
I said, nobody really cares. If you have content, nobody cares.
Yeah.
And somehow, you know, people quite disagree with me in many, many such situations. But I completely agree with you that finally, it's the substance of what we are discussing.
You're so right. We did a four-person interview, and I hesitate to do that many voices on a show. They did video, and it was one of my favorite. It was a one-off, and we had the entire room was black. Everything was black. And so all you had to do in terms of the eyes, you didn't have to focus. You didn't have to think about the hints left in the background, the Easter eggs and everything. And if you look at a current show on YouTube that I'm quite fond of called Hot Ones, where the guest and the host eat 10 wings that get hotter and hotter every wing. And he asks a question and the person's got flames coming out of their mouth and saying, I can't believe you asked me that. That's all black, except for the two people and the chicken wings. And it's so important to remember that sometimes, just as Dad said, fun is good, and sometimes simple is good. And we don't have to be fancy to tell a story really well.
Right.
Sound effects are great. I've recorded many sound effects to use in the background of different shows, and those there are times when that works, but there are also times when the interview is the best sound effect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I just thought I'd share with you in context.
I love this, it. Yeah. Well, you jogged my memory about the four shot that we did. And I love that because it was just so clean. And we already had all the curtains and we just built it in an afternoon. And then it was perfect. The client loved it. And we loved it.
That's so, right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Let's move to the other one I wanted to talk to you about was this chapter on purpose.
The podcaster records and posts and then moves forward, understanding that the world is not there in their control and that to try and change events goes against the true story, accept and create the content and share the audio. So many clients that we have are trying to make a point, trying to sway opinions, trying to talk about politics in the case of some of our clients, that this came to me from that experience where I think it's important to look at what we're saying, make our point and move on. And it depends, of course, I'm trying to equivocate, but to accept and create the content, share the audio, take a deep breath again and say, I've done what I've done. I've said my piece. And if you get called up for an interview after, then you get a chance to restate it. But I feel that it's important to seize the moment and participate fully, engage fully in the presentation, engage in the listening, and then flow on just as the river flows.
Yeah, I think that's profound. And
in that instance, just to go slightly further, I apologize. I included a local community, the president of the National Low Income Housing Coalition, who's been on several shows, Diane Yentel, and she has to post and present and move on because she's fighting a battle that she'll never really win, but she's making a difference. She believes in her cause. I believe in her cause. I follow her very intently on LinkedIn when she makes testifies before Congress and the Senate. And I know that this is a great example of that. She cannot fix the world with one statement, with one podcast. It's saying your piece, believing it, communicating it, and then moving on.
Absolutely, absolutely. It gives certain amount of clarity, because there are so many times you're questioning what you're doing.
Exactly. Yes, exactly my point. Yeah.
Okay, let's go to a little, it's chapter 53, which talks about shortcuts.
Well, again, I'm trying to get to the root of the thing. Creating a podcast can be easy. Follow the words as if they are leaves in a stream flowing with water. Shortcuts can lead to imperfections in the final product. If time were infinite, we could record the interview twice, use two producers, and edit the file for however long it takes. Listen to the interview soon after recording. Remember the moments the words were spoken. Edit and enhance. I think it's important. We can here we're looking over each other's shoulders, trying to edit, make sure everything works. I found, especially when I was doing everything, that it was the most powerful when I could sit down immediately after you and I were finished, because I was going to do the edit, and edit it then. And I understood the content more clearly. I felt the emotions, because I was the host of all those early shows. I was the interviewer, and I was the producer and the editor and the poster and did the social media. So if I could edit, and I've said this to our engineers, our staff, our producers, often I said, the sooner you can do the edit, the sooner you can do the proof just for the comments, if you're giving it off to another editor, the more clarity you will have for that experience. So if you and I meet and we have lunch and you buy, if I write you a note that afternoon, it's going to be connected to the event better than if I wait for a week. And that's just out of personal experience. If I waited 2 days in those early days, my son's worried I've got bad short-term memory now, I might not be as clear about what you and I talked about. So I think it's very important to stay connected to the content as consciously as you can. If you can't do it immediately, then the thing to do is to sit down and do a long listen and then start over again, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and this is so true. And I can totally see the connect with everything else we do.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Very, very true. Very true.
I think the raw emotions that are there, which is like in this conversation, which is inside now, inside me or inside you, obviously will ebb 3 days down the line, because something else will be occupying that space.
I think that's exactly it. That's exactly it. I really do. So being in the moment is part of this flow of nature. And it's, you know, it's hard to remember the stream after time has rolled on and how it was that day, because it's never the same. So I do. Alan Watts, the first book I read that he wrote on Taoism called The Watercourse Way, and that's in the dedication of my book, because I stole my brother's copy. And I think of life in terms of the river and the stream as a lifelong boater, how that works, again, as I wrote the Tao of Sailing, how that works with the elements, not really against the elements, how we flow with our experiences, our interview, instead of how we flow against the interview. If you're an editor and you're trying to make something that's already been recorded say what you want to say, it's not going to sound right. You need to follow the story and the intent. That's why it's so important for the editors who are not producing, not hosting, to be listening, thinking, listening hard, not distracted, not posting on Twitter, but listening hard and taking the notes, closing your eyes and listening with all of your heart, because don't turn it into something that's only technical. Try to listen to the feelings, as you just said, the feelings of the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And because words are not great for communication. That's the best we have got.
That's so true.
but they're not enough.
No.
And no. Which is where I think that focus, the ability to listen. Just as an aside, I had this guest in my podcast called Cash Nickerson. And he wrote a book called The Samurai Listener. He runs a corporation in the US.
Wow.
And he told me something which sort of I have told so many people this, including my wife, who is an educator, that look at this. We have a debate competition. We have public speaking competition. We encourage people to speak all the time.
Yes.
There is no listening competition. Listening,
no.
Listening is the example of Chinese whisper, where it's a game and yes. All you figure is that as it gets passed on and it becomes something very funny at the end and so on. But there is no stress, no value given.
Yeah.
To someone who actually yeah. intently listens.
That's so true. And as I've been working on a small paper about this or a talk, if I ever am asked to speak about these things, I will stress that. I think the act of listening is not thought about very much at all. We just assume we can see, we assume we can listen. But of course, when we're robbed of those senses, we think about them entirely differently. And my great aunt, who was 104 when she passed, she was due to glaucoma, which you get when you're that advanced. She could only listen, but it tuned her other senses so much. She knew more about current events than I could possibly have told her because she listened with engagement, with intent. Mm. And she knew because she listened to the radio in the morning and she would say, well, did you hear about that, Charlie? And I say, and who? I had no idea. And it's something that I've never forgotten because she could no longer really see, but the amount of love and empathy and the amount of her attention to details could not have been stronger at that point. And I think she lived longer because of it. When I got black dots a few years ago, it made me appreciate seeing. And when those finally went away, I was pretty darn appreciative of it. And I knew maybe that will happen again, but I'm very careful about my vision, try not to stare at the sun too many times. And I think listening is something that, quite frankly, we take for granted.
Absolutely. And that provides me a interesting segue into the book, back into the book, of... It's interesting how many chapters was written about listening.
And I didn't set out to, that came naturally. And that surprised me when I sat back and I looked at it and I put all the titles of all the chapters down. And I thought, my gosh, so much of this is about listening and thereby for the listener. And I don't even say that often enough. I've said many times, I hope that people who aren't podcast creators will look at this and think about the listening experience, because I think it's profound. And as a person who calls myself the chief listening officer, I think it's something that I want to continue to try to get people to acknowledge and just spend a moment. And of course, the idea, you said something wonderful before we started. Of course, the idea of reading this whole thing at once is not the way it's meant to be experienced. The idea is to read a passage, open it at random, or start at the beginning, but I generally encourage people to open it at random, read a page, make a note. There's a lot of white space there. It's like a book of poetry. Make a note, give a think, move on, put the book down, leave it there. If it's in a podcast studio, I'd love it to be next to the editor's chair and he can just listen to have that there and think about the process. So I really do feel, sorry, I meandered there. I do feel that listening is overlooked and underappreciated. And it's something that we're very lucky to have. You're right. English and speech is a limited form. That's why I think that video and podcasting is so huge now, because it's a combination of the audio and video. But I'm still an audio only for the most part guy, although the majority of what we produce here for our clients is video and audio.
Before I wrap this session up,
we can go on,
but I have two more questions to ask.
Please.
The first one is about your drawing. When do you do it? What do you use? What is your process? Do you have pen? Because there are some pen and ink, and there are some ones which have which have color, in the sense that at least black and gray and so on. So I'm curious, how do you do it?
Well, you're very kind. I've been drawing since I was a student in school because I was a poor student, and I love to draw in the margins. And of course, Mad Magazine had Mad About the Margins, where even in Mad Magazine, there was a guy who did, Sergio Aragones, did all the drawings in the margins. So I've been doodling and drawing my whole life. I remember all 4 years of college, I'd had a notebook in my pocket so that I could doodle or make a note, say, poem or a thought about a mailbox. And I've just been drawing. I started out with Snoopy when I was a very little guy. I used to be able to do a really good Snoopy. I'm a fan of Bill Watterson, who did Calvin and Hobbes and Boone County and some of the wonderful artists. And I read comic books for many, many years. I actually talked to a comic book dealer earlier today talking about my collection. And I bought comics for the art, not for the plot, which I have to say, in some of those early runs of Avengers, say, some of the plots were pretty bad. And the Marvel companies have done a great job of bringing those to light for us and the silver screen in ways that the stories are better, in my opinion. But it's wonderful to compare. So I've been drawing and sketching my whole life. And to answer your question succinctly, who's listening to that? I started drawing on those sessions when I wasn't the host or the guest. So I'd be in an office. Now, back then, I did everything face-to-face. Of course, now so much is done remote, and there's nothing wrong with that. But back then, I would do things face-to-face. So I might be around a small table in someone's office, and there's the host, and there's the guest, and I'm sitting with the gear that I brought in my son's backpack at that time, my Behringer board that it cost me $90, the thing I first used, and my microphones. Boy, I wish I knew more about microphones then. And I'd get everything gut, and I'd hit record, and I'd make sure it was really recording. Done that a few times. and you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
I hit record. That's one of the first things when I was giving people instructions. Make sure you're really recording, because that is a bummer. Then, to be quite honest with you, I wouldn't have that many jobs, because once I got the levels down, it was ready to go. So if they were going to talk for an hour, at least in the early part, I would take a photograph of the two people. And some, not all of these, I would then take that in my iPad. So I would say at least 90% of these are drawn digitally with a stylus on an iPad.
Okay.
Not all, but many. But certainly the first drawing that became the cover was hand-drawn on a pad, because I've got pictures of those. And I would turn the opacity down to about 10% so I could barely see the drawing. I understood what the general form was. And then I would draw as fast as I possibly could. I would make up the edges and draw the things and try to get a face that didn't look like a melted face. And I did these in sort of a turbo fashion so that I could blink them out there. And I felt that was a real, you know, like ice plunge. I would just go in, and I would say almost all of those were certainly less than 5 minutes, almost all of them, because my recipe, I still had to monitor, certainly in the early days, I was still monitoring the podcast, the recording rather. And I tried to do them quickly, respectfully, and often at the end of the show, I'd say, hey, do you guys like this one? And they'd be like, when did you do that? And I'd say, I just did it. And I felt that was a good use of my time, my downtime. And it felt that I had this other connection that later I realized I could use. I had no home for these at first. I just liked to draw. So a lot of them have a very, very faint idea of what the outlines were underneath it. Many are, of course, freehand, and many in the book are freehand, but I also did it in two different styles. And, you know, the complicated ones of a board, if you turn that down to 10%, put another layer on top of it, and then I just went as fast as I could. The color, you're very nice to mention the color. I generally draw in black and white and have a great deal of trouble with color, but an artist who I interviewed for an early podcast said, you got to add color. You got to add color, Charlie. It'll make them jump. So I did start adding a little bit of color when I could find the time. And it does make some of those pop out a little more. And I certainly did. I don't think it's in the book, but I certainly did one of that artist. And he had a Superman t-shirt on when we interviewed. So all I did was color in his t-shirt.
that would have looked brilliant, yeah, I'm sure.
It was a good guy. And so I continue to draw as much as time allows. I do a lot of freehand now, but I think it's like if you and I were learning to play guitar, I play guitar. The trick, it's no trick, practice, having fun with it. And my wife showed me an exercise where you just take a piece of paper and a pencil and a bead, and you just push the bead around and the bead moves and you go this way and that way and see what comes out of the pencil that way. Really a lot of fun. There used to be a game when you'd be drinking with your friend and you draw a line on the napkin and then he'd draw a line and you draw a line. You try to make a drawing. So I think drawing is, I'm not going to say I'm an artist, but I like to doodle. I like to draw. I think it allows us to express creativity.
Absolutely. And absolutely. I have a second question, but before that, one sub question here. What software are you using for your iPad?
I've moved around, but I currently use something called Procreate.
Right.
It's absolutely 100% free. It has a great deal, and you can find a lot of videos on, if anyone's listening is interested, a lot of videos on YouTube about great deal of depth that program has. I've also used a program called Sketchbook, but currently I generally only use Procreate.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Procreate. I'm trying to use it. There is an interesting European website called Domestika. And they have a lot of very inexpensive courses.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And I knew Domestika because I was trying to do some children's book illustrations. I was trying to learn and I found it. And then I found that they had a course on Procreate. And the way it goes is I first bought that course on Procreate and then I got the software.
So I'm a big fan because I have tried, and there's a couple others that I've tried. Mm. That is my favorite. I follow an artist who gives out free brushes, custom brushes, once a month on Pro that I can download and get for Procreate.
Oh, nice.
That's kind of fun because I don't understand the ins and outs of creating brushes, but he does. Yeah. So he offers a lot of things for money, and then as I say, once a month a free brush, which is really fun. So I think it's a way of experimenting. I think music allows you to be creative, whether you're good or just average, and that helps you be human, helps you do something outside of your own lane. I also practice it in listening. I know you have one more question, I'll quickly say there are many forms of many types of podcasts that I've listened to learn. Exclusively to learn. For example, I am now on a weekly phone call, a Zoom call with a fellow just for friendship. He's two or three or four people show up and just chat. He's a guy I listened to almost 20 years ago, and it's a B2B marketing podcast called For Immediate Release. And for the first month listening to it, I had no idea what they were talking about. But I now am a friend. Now I understand it implicitly and I value that. I try to listen if I'm communicating correctly outside of my lane. So what do I know about AI? Very little, but I try to use it every day, the free forms. I try to practice and see what value it can bring to me. Certainly our editors and our producers use it for things like jump cuts and basic editing tasks, which I used to have to do manually back when I had started out almost 12 years ago. And now it can be done in a moment. And then, of course, you have to sit down and really look at it to make sure it is good. But I listen to at least two or three podcasts that talk about AI. I do not understand all the terminology there yet. So, Dan, I really don't. But I'm learning. And it allows me to sort of be creative in my head as I listen. So
wonderful. I mean, maybe you can share in the show notes some of these names and I can put them out so people can also follow some of the stuff that you are listening. I would definitely like to check out some of them.
Yeah.
So my final question, I think the Tao of podcasting is, and maybe again, you have already thought, and I mean, definitely have thought and you possibly have done it already, but still, I need to ask this. This is a book meant for audio.
Ah, I really appreciate that. Since creating this and getting it posted to Amazon, which was a whole nauseatingly difficult experience for me, I had to get help. I have thought long and hard about doing audio version of it, and I intend to. I hope that if anyone gets it, they won't just sit down and listen to the whole thing at once. Again, I think it's not meant to be read that way.
Yeah.
But I have been encouraged, and I'll take your comment. I think it would be nice. I love what I've been able to enjoy and convey, and I'd like to create an audio version of the book. And I would like to do that this year. So the book's been out for about a year and a half and on Amazon for about a year and a half. And it was published locally before that. It was wonderful seeing it in an actual store. And I'd like to create a digital, an ebook version, which I haven't done yet, and then create the audio. I forget if that's called ACX, maybe, of that. And we certainly have the studio here. There's some standards that they have to meet, and we can meet that all in my basement with the air conditioner coming on or the furnace coming on. I can't do it. But here, I would just go into a studio. We have all the instructions, make a full recording of it, and put that online. Yeah, I've thought about it. I appreciate the question very, very sincerely.
Yeah, I mean, Tao of podcasting must be in audio.
Okay. All right. That's it. You heard it here, folks. I'm going to do an audio version. We'll try to do that this fall. And that way I can promote it for Christmas, because I'm hoping maybe to even buy an ad in some of the pod journals and say, this is a good gift for your podcasting friends.
Absolutely.
But just, again, the idea is just have it lying on the desk.
Yeah.
And pick it up when you're pouring a cup of coffee and say, huh. Okay, and then go about your business. That's all. And then if one or two people are interested in Taoism because of this, and they think, well, maybe I'll read about it. Maybe I'll read the Tao of Pu or the Watercourse Way or read the Tao Te Ching. That would be wonderful. When I was in college studying this, Taoism, not widely understood, was a little more recognized. And I find when I wrote it that not as many people are really aware of what that is in today in 2024. And so as I go forward, I actually changed my Instagram name from the Tao of podcasting to the philosophy of podcasting, because I think, again, in retrospect, after I looked at it after publishing, maybe I can talk about Aristotle and Socrates and Plato and the great philosophers. René Descartes maybe said, I think, therefore I am, and now I podcast. And if we can look at it from a classical philosophical point of view, maybe that can also add further light to talking, to listening.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Charlie, this has been wonderful chatting with you. I'm so glad that you could make time, and I appreciate your coming and spending time and being patient with all the questioning that I've been doing.
It's been a pleasure, and now I have a goal. I have a new goal, so it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.